Yes, it is. And I'm joined by Dr. Kimberly Earle and Cheryl Shaw today. Hello.
Hello.
Nice to have you here. Now, Cheryl, I noticed your badge. Mm-hmm. And yesterday was St. Paddy's Day, and I see you've got clover on your badge. So are we talking about Irish dogs?
No, very good, very good. We're going out onto the grass today and we're going to be talking about little mites that bite us and our dogs.
Right. Are there a lot of those?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Mm. That's going to be interesting. And Kimberly, do you have anything for us or are you going to make it up as you go along?
We're going to have lots of phone calls today. But if we don't, then I thought we would talk about feline lower urinary tract diseases.
We've got Wendy from Mannering Park on the line. Hi, Wendy. You've got problems with your dog.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thank you. You were telling me off air that your dog is a Doberman cross Rottweiler and it's suffering from anxiety.
Yeah, her mum was a Dobe and dad was a Rottweiler cross Dobe. Mm-hmm. And they were used as security dogs. We bought it through COVID, but never met the parents. They said that they were very aggressive dogs. They had to be locked up. It seems to be coming out. My dog's Gypsy Rose. She's nearly five. But she's getting worse as she gets older.
Yep.
She's been spoiled rotten by my partner, my husband. And someone comes at the door, like even family, even myself coming home from work, she goes absolutely ballistic, mm-hmm. barks and carries on until she recognises my voice. I try to make her sit if I'm home when the family arrive. She gets really flighty around the grandchildren when they're playing. If they're looking like they're, you know, going into sort of muck around with my husband, she gets a bit nippy and really gets overexcited. Mm. I'm just frightened that she could snap.
Yep,
I'm definitely. Just not quite sure what to do with her.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing that I would say, Wendy, is that you've got a really big dog who's got let's say a genetic predisposition just through breeding to be probably reactive. This is not a problem that we want to take lightly. It's not necessarily a disaster, but we also want to take it seriously and we want to try to put some measures in place before a problem arises, before anybody gets, you know, hurt or scared or whatever.
Try to snap at my son's hand when they were minding it the other week.
Yeah.
And so he's with her all the time.
We've got some great behavior vets in our local area, because this is going to be, there's probably anxiety underlying, but there's likely to be some, not training, but we're going to need to do some environmental, you know, changes and just changes in the way that we handle her and manage her and the way we act around her. Training is often a part of that, but we can't train away anxiety. And so somebody really needs to have a really good look at your dog and say, what of this is training or possessiveness and what is anxiety or is there an underlying, you know, we don't like to use the word mental health condition, but a neurological, you know, condition there that we can train. Because we can't train away anxiety, but we can medicate anxiety and then that will help facilitate training. So there's some really good behavior vets in the local area that we can give you some contacts for. If you maybe we can get you to leave your number with reception, or we've probably got it here, and I might just drop you a line with some behavior vets that you can approach, because I think it's a more serious problem. And when we're dealing with big dogs and little children, and I'm potentially a little bit sensitive because I've had a staff member who got done by a big dog yesterday, I think it's really important that we take it seriously. But there's lots of things that we can do to help this, but it's a little bit more in depth than what I can give you advice for in a 30-second blurb here on the radio. So we've got your number here, and I will get in contact with you and give you some names of some great behavior vets who you can approach and get a real proper assessment done of your lovely dog.
That would be very helpful. I never leave her alone with my grandkids.
Great, that's really important.
I haven't done since day dot because I've always noticed. I've always had Dobermans.
Yep.
I grew up with Greyhounds, Dobermans. And I only ever had one cross, Roddy Bull Mastiff, and never had an issue.
Yeah.
Never had an issue.
And anxiety definitely gets worse as they get older. So, it's a progressive condition. Yeah, yeah, for sure. So, All right. So I'll be in touch shortly after the show.
Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Wendy. Thanks.
Thanks very much. Next on the line, we have Suzanne from Seam. Thanks for holding, Suzanne. How can we help you?
Good afternoon. I'm just ringing about my daughter's two cats. Mm-hmm. They're about 8 years old, males, and the one of the Morty, the cat, well, he had a trouble urinating, so took to the vet, had a urinary tract infection, mm-hmm. and on antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Became kind of hyperactive after that when he got home. And then now the problem that I'm ringing about is that he walks past and he sprays on my daughter's partner, on the furniture, just bang, sprays. Very unusual. Never happened before.
Mm. He's a de-sexed male?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's interesting that you say he had a UTI, because it's quite uncommon for male cats in particular, but any cats under the age of sort of 10 to 12 years of age to have a urinary tract infection. They get lots of urinary issues, which was one of the things we were going to talk about today. But UTIs are uncommon. Did you say they're in a multi-cat household? There's more than one cat in the home?
They're two brothers.
Male. So there's, again, this is potentially a multifactorial issue. And it's always hard when and if one cat, has an issue in terms of anxiety or stress, or how they're handling the dynamics in the house. Even when we have litter mates, they sometimes, as they get older and mature, they sometimes will react to each other differently, and they can be reacting to things going on in the house, but also things going on outside the house. So cats will pick up very intuitively on if there's other cats in the local neighborhood, if you've had movement of neighbors and they've brought a new cat in, or just a new feral cat has moved into the neighborhood, and sometimes that will cause an undue level of stress. Again, it's probably an issue when we're dealing with a cat who is spraying like that. My gut feeling would be that this cat has got to have some sort of anxiety, sort of issue. And we're really going to need to look at the picture on a whole. What are the movements of the cats in the house, mm-hmm. and where are the litter trays, and how are they interacting with each other and their environment and with the people in the house? So it's a little bit more of a holistic thing. You know, the basic things that we always talk about is making sure that we have really, really good litter tray access, and potentially in multiple places in the house, because sometimes cats can be very passive aggressive, and you can have one cat, standing at the end of the hallway, not doing anything, not snarling, not growling, not hissing, but just blocking the access to the cat if the litter tray is all the way down at the other end of the hallway. So having another litter tray in another part of the house. Mm-hmm. Urine spraying is a real interesting sort of thing where, they're usually marking territory. And so I guess we probably need to look at what kind of relationship the cats have with the humans in the house. But I would say that doing anything we can in general to reduce the stress in the house, using things like lots of multi-level cat perches or places that the cats can get up to, so we can really extend their environmental range, making sure we're doing things like even using some of the Feliway and other pheromone products that are available for cats to try to help reduce anxiety. I think it's definitely going to be a matter of probably going back to the vet and describing, what's happening. We probably need to have a consult just where we, assess what the interactions in the house are with the humans and the cats and how the house is set up. We have a little map that we sort of do, where we get you to sort of map out the house and show us the layout of the house and the layout of where all the litter trays and things like that are, and the food and the favored resting perches, and where the interactions with the humans, the spraying, does it happen at any particular location in the house or time of day, that sort of thing. It's a bit of a complex sort of thing, but I would start with, let's try to minimize stress and anxiety in the house generally, making sure there's plenty of resources for everybody, and then probably go back to your local vet and sort of say, hey, this is, what's happening. Probably double checking to make sure that urinary tract infection is cleared up. So a follow-up urine sample, which may need to even be sent for a culture to the lab, because occasionally cats can have an occult urinary tract infection. So start with that. And then if we're still, if we can't work it out, we're still seeing problems, then again, this is another situation where seeking the assistance of a proper behavior vet who can really have a close look at what's going on is going to be really important.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds all right. We'll we'll deal with the anxiety first and see if there is, I mean, there is a new addition to the house, but the baby is now 1.3, so.
Yeah, it's still, cats, you know, cats deal with change and stress very differently than what humans do and what dogs do, and sometimes it's very difficult to actually identify that actually these cats are struggling to adapt to the new home. So having a new baby in the house, even if the baby's already over a year old, could certainly be, you know, that might have just been something that's been building up and building up and building up, and you get a UTI on top of that, and this cat's just like, oh my God, I'm just not coping with this world anymore.
Okay.
Good luck with it, Suzanne.
Very good advice. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye. And Cheryl, we're going to talk about grass mites. Can you tell us what are they?
Okay, so they're tiny, tiny little mites, and it's the larvae that bites you. It bites humans and it bites dogs. For me, I know it's real because when I go out into the garden, they bite around my ankles. They get me so much that I have to go and have a shower. I get so insanely itchy. Now, this happens to our dogs as well, particularly dogs that spend a lot of time out in the grass. And if they are bitten by these little larvae of the mite, they will often lick their paws or they'll lick their legs. Sometimes it'll affect their belly. So if you've got those dogs that are laying or rolling in the lawn, they can become insanely itchy. When they go inside, they'll often just not be able to settle. And sometimes you'll see little rashes and things like that. My advice is always, if your dog is scratching after it's been out on the lawn or in the grasses, to give them a bath just to try and settle it down, like I do with my legs, because that just helps to sort of minimise that allergen that has happened onto the dog. Now, the mites are so tiny, but you can check if you've got them in your lawn. Sometimes you'll see little like little spider webs, but even finer in the base of the grass. So when the grass is coming up, you look between the grass and you'll see these little webs. And it's particularly at this time of the year in autumn, very, very prevalent. So it's something to keep in mind. You can also check if they're there by using white paper. So if you push white paper down into the lawn or up the grass, you'll sometimes see this like little orangey yellow red colour that gets onto the paper, and that's the little mites. So they're able to be seen.
Oh, those little red things.
Yeah. Oh. So, and if you allow your lawn to get long, obviously they've got more ability to go up further onto the grasses, and then they'll get more onto the dog. So just one of those reminders that keeping our lawn, not just for mites is important, keeping it short, but also for ticks and things like that. And grass seeds, because as grasses get longer, the grass seeds, and they're a real problem, aren't they, Fiona? Fiona. It's not Fiona today, it's Kimberly.
That's okay.
Yeah, but they're an issue, the grass seeds.
Yeah, because grass seeds can get caught in fur. They can, some of them will sort of bury into the skin and things like that, where you can actually get, you know, them poking in and protruding into the skin.
Yeah.
Grass seeds cause lots of dramas where they penetrate up in between toes and things like that. So that can be, but they're uncomfortable too. If you've got a long-haired dog and they're caught up in a mat, you know, they can be pretty itchy and scratchy. And we will sometimes shave off a dog that's got really matted fur and find that they've been, you know, scraped up quite a lot by multiple grass seeds and burrs in the fur.
Yeah. Mm. So I suppose everybody needs to just be making sure that their lawns are nice and short. You know, we do tend to do our lawns more in summer than we do in autumn because things slow down a bit. But keeping that lawn down, you know, nice and short so that you're minimising the irritation that can often happen. And as grasses get longer as well, they seed. And also there's the pollens, which cause another allergen. So there's so much, you know, to think about with your grass. My dogs don't actually go onto our lawn. They have a courtyard area, so I don't have those issues. But I do. When I go out, I get quite itchy.
Is there a way to get rid of the mites, or is that a question for Gardening Talkback?
Probably.
Probably for Judy, yes.
All right, well, if you've got a question about mite, you can ask Judy on Monday and hopefully she'll have an answer. And in the meantime, we're going to talk about feline lower urinary tract disease. There you go, I said it properly this time.
You did, you got it there. So we've already broached it a little bit with Suzanne's call. Feline lower urinary tract disease, or we use the acronym FLUTID, is a bit of an umbrella term that we use to describe describe urinary issues that we see in cats. And it's a really, really common problem. And unlike with humans and with dogs, cats are not very commonly affected by urinary tract infections. Infections is really rare in cats. And often, particularly if it's a young cat, often it's a trigger for us to straight away look for an underlying, you know, cause. There's something, if you've got a young cat with a young under 10 years of age with a urinary tract infection, we should be looking for some sort of predisposing or underlying problem. But we get a lot of cats who will develop these symptoms of feline lower urinary tract disease or fluted, difficulty urinating, peeing with blood in it, you know, things like that. Often it's in male cats, and in male cats it can be really, really dangerous and life-threatening because they've got a very narrow sort of longish urethra, and if they build up a plug or a stone and it gets caught in that urethra, the bladder can be blocked, and then they can actually die from that. So what happens is the bladder gets blocked, the kidneys are continuing to produce urine, the bladder gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and you get this whole cascade of problems where you've got pressure building back on the kidneys, so you get kidney damage. The urine and the chemicals in the bladder start to cause problems throughout the body with increased potassium to the level where sometimes these cats are at risk of sudden cardiac arrest because potassium can be toxic to the heart. We get bladder overstretching. You can obviously get issues with the bladder rupturing. And if you can think about, you know, the last time you were on a car trip and your husband didn't want to stop and you've been like, I am holding my legs here. I can't pee for the last 2 hours. A lot of times these cats will present to us either first thing in the morning when the cats can't get the urine out when they're doing a first urine, or when clients come home from work and all of a sudden they, you know, they're listening to the cat and he's screaming and yowling in the litter box. And when they've looked, there's nothing, you know, he's not producing anything. Those cats sometimes have been blocked for hours and hours and hours. So it's an immediate life-threatening problem. Female cats don't tend to get obstructed because their urethras are much shorter and they're a little bit wider. But we can see inappropriate urination. So a cat that starts to pee in the bathtub or in the sink or just through the kitchen floor and they've got little spots of blood in them. And cats will display their stress, or they will show that they're stressed and anxious about something going on in their world, often through bladder inflammation, and that's where we start to get this. So, 40 years ago, we used to see a lot of blocked cats due to crystals and stones in the bladders. And the good people who make, you know, our processed pet foods have done really, really good work to reduce the salt and the ash contents and things like that. So we don't see very many cats these days that have crystal blockages or stone blockages in their bladder. We much more commonly see cats that have what we call urethral plugs. And these are tissue plugs from an inflamed bladder that sloughs off some cells, some inflamed cells, and there's probably clots of blood and stuff in that as well. And those protein plugs block up the bladder or block up the urethra, and so the bladder becomes overly full, and we get the same problem. And so we are much more cognizant these days of, you know, cats that are living in a multi-cat household where maybe they're not overtly fighting with one of the other cats, but they maybe don't actually, you know, really like them very much. They're just sort of living tolerance. New babies, like Suzanne was saying, there's a new baby in the house, new dogs in the house, new cats in the environment outside the house. Even for our cats that are indoor-only cats, they will 100% be aware if a new cat moves into the neighborhood. And, you know, in the back of your mind, sometimes you can hear the squalling cats in the background. Well, your cats can, you know, hear that too. Construction. We've definitely seen it when people are doing constructions on their house, or they're living in a neighborhood where there's new houses being built and there's a lot of construction noise. Sometimes that's enough to set a cat off. So we want to build awareness around this because, A, if it's a male cat, it is absolutely a life-threatening emergency. A cat who can't pee is a cat who's, you know, in a critical emergency. And we also want to be aware that these are things that need to be managed. They're not likely to be cured because, you know, a cat who's an anxious personality is probably going to be an anxious personality. So we're going to need to do everything we can to optimize their living arrangements, to try to give them as many comforts and to try to reduce that stress as much as possible, because we definitely see flare-ups, you know, repeat flare-ups and things like that. So if you've had a cat, they've had a urinary tract issue in the past, you know, we want to always be sort of thinking, what's going on in my house that, you know, that I can optimize for this cat to try to reduce their stress so we don't get a recurrence of this problem. And we always would tell people with, you know, when they present to us with a male cat that's blocked, 50% of blocked males, we can unblock them successfully almost always, but 50% of them will reblock again within 12 months. So anything we can do to, you know, prevent that from happening is going to be really important. So talk to your vet about it if you've had concerns. If you see those sorts of symptoms, you know, a cat who's inappropriately urinating throughout the house or having difficulty in the litter box or there's blood in it, talk to your vet straight away. Get onto it right away.
Okay, good advice. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
This is Pet Chat, and we're going to check out our pets of the week. And this week we've got Minty and Chief. And we'll start with Minty, our cat. Very cute.
So Minty is a gorgeous little white cat with little black patches. Now, I'm told that Minty has actually appeared as Pet of the Week previously, about a year ago. So she still hasn't found her forever home. She's living comfortably in her foster carer's home. She loves to have chin scratches. She likes napping in bed. She has a big purr and a little soft chirrup of a meow. Her details, we don't really know how old she is. Her details are a little bit of a mystery. She was found in a cat carrier at the side of the road with two kittens. So, you know, they're thinking she could be, you know, probably early in life, a couple of years old, maybe it's that sort of thing. She's untested with dogs, children, and cats. But so far she's shown herself to be a very adaptable cat. She's very cute. The picture online is very cute with her wrapped in some Christmas tinsel. If you're looking to have a nice young adult cat, Minty might be the one for you. And I'm sure she'd be happy to get into her forever home.
For sure. Now, next we've got Chief.
And so here's little Chief. Now, he is a 3-year-old male Staffy, Staffordshire Bull Terrier cross, very affectionate dog. He's a man's best friend sort of dog, loves to be a bit of a lap dog. They say he's toilet trained. He's really good with kids, happiest when he has a toy or treat or somebody to cuddle. He's super toy driven and treat driven. So, you know, that's good from a training standpoint. Says he enjoys playing tug of war and learning new tricks. He is still learning to walk politely on a lead, but he's making good, steady progress. And he can show a bit of excitement based reactivity, which probably is coming from a little bit of anxiety and enthusiasm rather than aggression. So he's a nice young dog, but an adult dog. He would thrive in a calm, predictable home where he can receive plenty of love, attention, and ongoing training. They do feel he would be best as an only pet. But with a home that would be able to commit to slow, structured introductions, he might be able to go with another dog. Secure fencing definitely required. So he is in foster care and looking for his forever home as well.
And if you'd like to check out Minty or Chief, you can go to 2NURFM.com.au and click on our lifestyle programs and Pet Chat, and you'll find our pets of the week. And that's it for this week. Thank you very much, Cheryl Shaw and Dr. Kimberly Earle. And we'll catch up with you next week for
next
Pet
week,
Chat
yep.
on 2NURFM.
See you.